Hi, this is Chad. I'm so glad to be part of your journey towards product mastery so that you can develop better products for your customers and those products that customers will love. Today, we're talking about amazing product teams. Don't we all want to be part of a really good product team? Well, what's involved in creating one? And then once we have that, how do we manage it? How do we keep it going? Well, joining us is Amruta Makhtali. She's the Chief Product Officer at Skyflow, the world's first and only data privacy vault developed as an API. She spent over a decade mastering the complex domains of data privacy and analytics and amassed an impressive track record spanning agile startups as well as tech giants, including Microsoft and Salesforce. Also, we do take detailed written notes for everything we discuss. You will find those along with a one-page action guide to help you put into action some of the key takeaways that we'll talk about. You'll find those resources at productmasterynow.com/475. This podcast is made possible by the Rapid Product Mastery Experience, the RPM experience. This helps product VPs and leaders get their product managers and everyone else contributing product to increase their performance together, working in alignment to reach your North Star objectives. What we do is we meet virtually for 9 weeks, 75 minutes each week, and participants learn the 7 essential product knowledge areas. And in the process, they're building trust and collaboration with each other. It's unlike other training. It really does increase not only your knowledge, but your performance together as a team. To see if it will help you, please go to productmasterynow.com/RPM. Amruta, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much, Ed. It's wonderful to be here.
I'm delighted to have the opportunity to discuss. There's many topics based on your experience we could dive into, but I wanted to explore teams with you some, and specifically how you think about teams and that high-performing product team. And to just frame this for listeners, and you may think about it differently, I'm really interested for the discussion. But when we look at teams, some teams, just in general, whether there's product teams or not, they bumble around for a while, right? And then we start figuring out how to work with each other. And we get the work done, and the project ends, and the team gets dispersed. And then another project starts, and the team, new people come together. And it's actually rare to have a truly high-performing team where they're magical to me, right? I've only been on a couple, I admit, in my career that you stay together long enough and you do the right things. Yeah. Doing the right things is what we're going to talk about, where you, yeah, it's magical that the team performs so much faster than most teams. So let's talk about that, wherever you want to start on creating this high-performing team.
Yeah, I think high-performing teams are like this beautiful orchestra. You have the right instruments at the right time, and you're the conductor of bringing the right things together. High-performance teams, surprisingly, mean very different things in different environments and what you're working on. So in my experience, sure, I've been in some not so, and then been fortunate enough to work in really good high-performance teams and assemble some great ones. And some of the learnings I've had through my experience of putting some high-performance teams together is, first of all, knowing what problem this team is looking to solve and having a clear understanding of that and making sure every single person on the team is bought into that. Because unless and until you're not marching towards the same goal, you will never perform well. I think that's been my first principle of making sure that we all know and we are passionate about the problem that we're solving for. The second is, like I say, it's like music. You need to assemble the teams that will work well with each other and will challenge each other. And this will change extremely based on the environment that you're in, right? We changed our environments from in-person to remote. People who work well in person may not work well in remote. People who do great in consumer products may not do well in B2B products and different kind of things. So you want to make sure that group can work really well synchronously together. You have that alignment. And then the most important thing is iterativeness. A high performance team does not happen overnight. You can't just assemble a bunch of people, tell them this is the problem we're going to solve, and boom, it's not going to happen that way. You are going to have to guide them. You're going to have an iterative process. And I'll say something that may be whatever, controversial, non-controversial. Remove folks from the team who are causing the team to slow down or move in the wrong direction sooner rather than later, because that starts bringing the performance of the rest of the folks down. As important as it to put the right people in, it is important to take the wrong people out at the right time. So I'm a person who thinks in threes, so I would say those are my threes.
Okay. I heard a lot more than threes in there. So we're going to emphasize the ones that you want to stand out. But I really like the analogy, right, with the orchestra. I have thought about people in the product management roles as the person leading that orchestra, yes, right?
The conductors.
Yeah, exactly, right? Thinking of it that way. Where to go first? So let's talk about skills maybe first. Yeah. And then I want to get into some of the things you brought up that really speak to character depth, yeah, and how people fit together and recognizing when they don't fit together, right? So just for a team to perform well that is developing a product, what kind of skills are we looking for?
I think it's skills that you're looking for. They're like traditionally how we talk about like their soft skills and their hard skills.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. I think any person either getting into a team, starting a team, needs to have a very good understanding of the hard skills, because they differ. Sometimes you're looking for generalists who can dip into any area and do anything. Sometimes you're looking for someone who comes with specific experience, specific by having worked in particular technology. And I think that's pretty specific to who you're trying to hire and where you are. And that's easy. And I think on the other side, from the skill on the soft side, a couple of things that I have seen be very successful is you want to make sure they have amazing communication skills. Mm. Especially if you are hiring product managers. They are, as we say, the conductors and orchestrators across everything. You need to have really strong communication skills. You need to make sure that you have the ability, and I'm talking about just the skills to do your job, ability to make hard decisions. A lot of times we underestimate the power of making decisions. People hesitate making decisions, which is why things don't move forward. And when I say someone needs to make decisions, there's a lot that goes behind it. You need to have a strong point of view. You need to know the market. You need to know your customer. You need to know where the business is going. And you need to know how things can get done. That's when you can make the right decision. And that's what you need in terms of the skill set to be able to make those right decision, prioritization, all of that comes as a part of it, right? And the other thing is bringing people together. You can never be successful if you're going alone. You have to have the ability to bring people together, and communication skills, decision-making skills, knowing the market, knowing the customer, putting all that together also helps you bring people together. Mm-hmm. And I think from the soft side, especially for product people or even anyone in the product team, right? Designers, documentation, anything. I think those pieces become extremely important from just a skills perspective.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the soft skills often get underappreciated until you start to get more experience and realize that this is how business relies on people that can work together.
Exactly.
And developing that is important. And understanding, you having that perspective that you talked about, right? Just if you're in that leadership role of making decisions, helping others make a decision, what is it we're doing together? Where are we headed? What's our market? What matters to our customer? How are we aligned to the strategic objectives of the business? All those things matter a lot.
All those things.
You said something important that the way I thought about it at the time when you said it was, we all like to be part of something that matters, right? And feel like what we're doing is important. Can you just talk about that a little bit? And I don't know if you have an example of a team that was really evident, or maybe on the other side, a team, man, we know that no one cares about this project. What are we doing together, right?
No, that is so important because it's one of those things, right? That motivates you. What do you wake up in the morning to do? It's, of course, the people you work with and what you're working on. Those are the two key buckets, right? I think what matters is the problem you're solving and who you're solving for should resonate with you at some level. I'll give you an example, right? And I'll give you like a very kind of emotional, close to heart example and a very business example. I was at a startup called Clio, which was a health benefits company, right? Mm-hmm. And what we were doing there is helping families go through pre-pregnancy all the way to end of life, mm-hmm. providing the type of support that we all need. We all talk about it takes a village to bring up a child and all these things, and you need the support system and all these things. And when I went there, I, being a mom, have experienced a lot of things myself and having had aging parents and stuff. So it was something that I felt. I knew the problem, it was close to my heart, and every single person who was part of Clio came in there with that feeling.
Yeah.
Right? And it was one of those emotional, very hard feelings. So when you come in and we talk about, oh my God, I helped this one person, I made a change in one person's life, and that was enough to get through the whole day. It was like adrenaline for the whole day, right? I think that is one piece where we talk about what matters. And it's, I say it's an emotional one because it's a little different when we think of building a SaaS product. I'm not changing a person's life or giving birth to a child when I'm building a SaaS product. But I think what you want to think of there is what matters to you. So for example, I'll take the example of Skyflow, right? Privacy. That's what matters to all of us in Skyflow. Mm. The core purpose that we go with is how can we make sure that everyone can work with the information that they have, serve their customers better, but never compromise privacy. No breaches, no information shared that shouldn't be shared in the right way, right? Mm-hmm. That is the actual main purpose and goal that we all agree with. And then there are like sub goals, right? Okay, we're going to do this here and there. And that comes later. So I think that's what I mean by making sure it matters and you're marching towards the right thing. And then to your example, I've of course been in situations, and I'd say this happens a lot more in larger companies, right? Because you're so big and you're working on something and suddenly the priorities of the company change and nobody's talking about the small feature or function you're working on and it doesn't matter anymore. And that does happen. I'll be very honest. That does happen. But that is where I feel you want to think of how you can matter. And a lot of us keep talking about alignment to the business goals of the company. And this is where it becomes extremely important. If you are in that situation where, let's say, you were working on something and you feel that it doesn't matter to the company anymore, really ask hard questions. Why do you think it doesn't matter to the company anymore? Just because nobody's talking about you? Just because nobody's bringing you up on a slide deck? But then you want to look at, are you making an impact on the revenue? Is anything that you're doing aligning to the goal? And if it is not, make the decision to stop doing it. Because you are the only one who can change that mindset. And you will know why you've put in that bucket. And everyone keeps saying, oh, we feel like the stepchild. Nobody cares. We're going to die. They're going to fold us in. I should leave this team. I should leave this company. Like, if that's how you feel, first figure out how you get out of it. Right. And if you are in a place where you think it doesn't matter, then it won't exist in a company. There are no leaders in any company who are going to keep anything running and putting money in there if it really does not matter at some level. Right. So a lot of times I have noticed that it is very personal, and it's also the responsibility of the leaders actually to make everyone understand how they matter and how they are making a difference. And then you have to do a little bit of realignment saying, is this still important to you? We might have pivoted. We might have done something else. This is how we matter. This is what we're going to work on. If this is still in alignment with how you are thinking when you came in, continue. Otherwise, it may not be the right place for you.
Yeah. Absolutely. Really good. So everyone needs to know how they matter and the difference that they're making and the relationship with the project. And as product people, we should be invested in products that actually matter too. If we're creating value for the customer, that's a great place to start, right?
Exactly.
We're on a winning path at least. So once upon a time, younger in my career, I was much more into team building activities and exercises, right? It would like, yes, take the new team to the climbing gym where we would repel each other and start building trust and those sort of things. And it's not that those things aren't important anymore, right? For whatever, maybe because we're doing more work remotely now. But I do think it's important for the tone that you establish at the beginning and the expectations. Let's talk a little bit about maybe the character of the people or the team, how you want that to feel, and what you might do to establish those things.
It's a very good question. I think we keep talking about team culture and we just slide it through sometimes, right? But I think as you're either entering a team that exists or you're building a team from scratch, that is very important because that will guide the character of the people that you're trying to hire, right? They have to be in that culture either that you're trying to build or is already there. So some of the characteristics that at least I look for is one of the most important thing is curiosity. Right. Every single person, at least on my teams I've built, always need to be curious, because when you're curious, you are respecting people. When someone has an opinion, you're listening. Mm-hmm. You want to learn more. You're always evolving. You're talking to customers. You're always like, it just comes with curiosity. right? The humbleness also comes with the fact that you're curious. I think that is one important trait. The other characteristic that I look for is having a strong point of view, but having a very collaborative or humble way of communicating that. And that is the character that you're looking for. It's not, I believe this is how it needs to be done. You guys don't see it, so you just don't know it, anything. Mm-hmm. Right? That can't be the case. You got to get them with you. And that is the character I'm looking for. It's like you're curious, you have a strong point of view, and you know how to get people to understand that point of view. And the third piece is just how they can work with other people and be part of that piece. And there will actually be people in your team who will be the flag bearers of the culture of your team. And because every leader is different, you might be the kind of leader who's very loud and can be the big person who's getting people. Or you may be the leader who takes a little bit of a step back and has a person in your team who actually embodies all the things that you want your team to have. And that is the person who brings people together. Then give them the opportunity to do that and make sure it's either you or someone in your team who has that, is that flag bearer of making sure that characteristic is there. And then I'll always say the one thing, if you see anyone who does not have the characteristics you're looking for, make sure you make the change sooner. Mm. Either you help them get there, or if sometimes folks are amazing, but they're not a fit, get them out, because it impacts everyone else. And I know I repeat this multiple times, but I've gone through enough in my career where you've seen more bad things happen when you don't make changes at the right time.
Right. Yeah. you wait too long, which is also where that guidance often comes from people about hire slow to, you know, find the person with the right fit, because that's
painful
to deal later. Yeah.
And also when you're hiring, the one thing I always tell people is, I don't know if everyone has the luxury of this, is hire the one person that will make the highest impact on everyone else. Sometimes it could be a lot of people go with, oh, I'm going to hire junior people and I'm going to groom them and bring them up. What I have seen success with is try to do that depending on budget and stuff, whatever. But if you try to hire a high performer and a leader first, they can then build their team. First of all, selfishly, it gives me more time on my hand. And the other thing is it creates a domino effect that I like.
Yeah.
So with everything, then you create your 2-3 high performers, and then A's hire A's, as we know. So you're creating that culture and that piece from up top itself. And that really helps.
Yeah, that's a good wisdom there from experience, right? To have that impact. The getting rid of people. So developing software. I don't know if this is still a term that is used very much or not. I remember many discussions about this in a book, actually, once upon a time, about prima donnas, right? And it's that person who is exceptionally skilled, right?
Yes.
The person who you want their skills on the team, but because of how they interact with the team, the notion of the prima donna is the person who basically believes they're going to do it their way and they don't care about anyone else's perspective, right? And I have had teams that are all prima donnas, right? Because of just the nature of the work. And it's a unique environment, right? And you learn to manage through that. And sometimes you find that in R&D labs where everyone's a PhD and that's just the nature of things, right? But I've had other really good teams where the prima donna comes in and I want their skills, but they're disrupting the team, right? And as you said, the choice there is, do you keep them around for their skills, or do you try to do what you think is best for the team?
Yeah.
What are your thoughts?
It depends on the need of the hour. So there have been times, I'll be honest, I have kept prima donnas on my team because their skills were more valuable to me at that point in time. And hiring someone to replace that skill would have been taking me back a lot. And there was nobody else in the team who could fulfill that skill, who could fill in that gap. So I have kept prima donnas on the team. But the way I was able to keep them is I gated them in their own world and made sure that everyone else around knew that I knew that they were a prima donna. Right? Because I think a lot of times people are looking for acknowledgement, right? Saying, I want you to know that this person is really not collaborative or working or things like that. And then have the other people see what you're seeing. Know why that person is right, right? And you know what? I understand, but right now this person's doing XYZ. We really need that. And I'm going to help coach that person to work better on these things. And you guys tell me where you're having the most issues, and I will make sure that doesn't happen. And of course, on the side, I started looking for the talent right. to replace. But those are the times I've had to keep it and work around it to make sure I don't lose the other valuable people. Mm-hmm. And it's you're starting to give more attention to the others than the prima donna. It's somewhere there.
Right.
And then I think in other situations, you're out.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I have really, with a heavy heart, let people go. And it's just been that, dude, you're very smart, but it's just not working out.
Yeah.
You need to find someone you can work better with. So it's both cases, I think. Mm-hmm. And we have to know how to work in both situations. It's impossible. Right.
Yeah, there's the pragmatic needs of the team and what we need to accomplish for the project. There's also the what we value as part of the culture that you mentioned and how we want to work together and honor each other in the process too. And
exactly.
So it does get complicated.
It does. The one thing I will say, I had one person on my team and I was very surprised. Everyone's, my God, they're never going to change this and that. And you know what? In a few months, they did change.
Yeah.
They did change. It was all about, you just have to find that one or two things, which is why they are like that. And what I found out through that person is they just felt like nobody else was listening to them or undermined them or didn't think that they were smart enough. While it was the reverse, everyone knew that person was extremely smart and they would just go quiet because they had nothing else to say. And this person felt disrespected. So it's all about that. I have this model called Heart Tree Star that really helps me. So with every single person on your team, you need to know heart, what drives them, what do they love to do, tree, how do they like to grow, and star is how do they like to be rewarded or recognized. And once you know these three, you can actually guide anyone in any place. And that's what happened with this person. The star is what I realized he wanted and couldn't get.
Right.
And once you fix that, it just comes together.
That's really good. And if you could go through that one more time, because I don't want listeners to miss this.
Of course.
Because just recognizing we're people and we have internal needs and external needs, and we want to be liked usually. We want to show up and think that we're making an important difference, and we want to feel cared by other people as well.
Yeah.
So your Heart Tree Star framework. Tell us each one again.
So Heart Tree Star. So heart is, what does the person love to do or want to do, right? This could be different things. The type of problems they like to solve. Do they love being only working on engineering and technical things? Do they like to be in front of customers? Do they like to do more public speaking versus not? So what do they love to do? Second is tree. How do they want to grow? Do they want to become managers? Do they want to be ICs? Do they want to be specialists in a particular area? Well, do they want to learn this new piece and be experts or go-to people there? How do they want to grow so you can help them? Then star is how do they want to be recognized or rewarded? Everyone will say money is great, but go beyond, keep that on the side, right? Do they like to be rewarded publicly, accolades in like public meetings and stuff? Do they like to be rewarded regularly on small things that they're doing? Do they like to be rewarded by upper management or their peers? How do they like to be recognized and rewarded for their work? Do they like to be rewarded by their work by getting more important work? A lot of people, interestingly, are like that. If I've done a great job, put me on the next most important project that you have. And that would be the best recognition that I could get. So I think understanding those three pieces really helps align your teams and build that harmony in your teams and also help grow people. We're all here to help each other.
Right. Yeah. And I think also I love that framework, right? The Heart Tree Star framework. But for the growing people, that's also something that any team member can help each other do, not just the leader, is pointing out like, you're really good at that. And a lot of the time, the things that we're good at, we don't particularly recognize that's unique because it may, in some sense, come natural for us, we think. And helping each other kind of recognize, like, man, you're really good at talking to those customers about that problem, right? Or whatever the case is. So that's really useful. And one more thing I want to come back to real quick was you talked about humility, being humble as a characteristic. And it was interesting to me, this was actually my PhD chair who we remained friends. And after I had earned mine, he was doing a research project on leadership and leaders that transform organizations. And I don't think of leaders, especially executives, as being humble, as exhibiting humility at some of the times. But he was pointing out that in general, the best leaders have this other characteristic, which is they're confident. They certainly will present an image of confidence, and we need that to follow. But they're also, they have this characteristic of humility as well. And I just wanted to remind all of us of that, that this is a useful part of leadership, that you don't have all the answers, and having humility and working as a team is important.
Very important. I couldn't emphasize that on that more. And I think we just love working with people who are humble, vulnerable, nice, listen to you, appreciate you, and all of that comes together. And selfishly, if you're humble, you'll actually learn more things. You'll be better.
Yeah, it's a good point.
It's just one of those things that I strongly believe in.
Excellent. I've really enjoyed the discussion about putting together good product teams. As listeners know, we like innovation quotes, and I asked you to bring us one. And I know when we chatted previously, you actually have several, but I'm going to ask you to pick one out that might, you know, speak to you now in light of this conversation. And if you can share what that means to you as well.
Sure. I think I have, as I was studying your chat, I have recency bias when I think of these quotes. And more recently, based on even what I was helping my kids with and what I'm going through, one of the quotes that I'll read is from actually Dr. A.P. Abdul Kalam. He used to be the president, one of the presidents in India, and he was aerospace scientist in India. He was the one who did like the ballistic missiles and the nuclear tests and stuff. And one of the things that he said was, your best teacher is your last mistake. And that's something that, at least more recently, is something that I keep close to my heart. When, of course, as I said, with my kids, I'm like, it's okay to make a mistake, because that's going to teach you to get better. And the way it resonates with me is, of course, I've had a very long career. I have seen a lot of different things. And every single decision that I approach nowadays, I've had the luxury of having such diverse experiences that I'm able to tap into one of my past experiences and see actually what I did wrong, and then make sure I'm not repeating that again. And that is the one way that that it's always teaching me, in the smallest of decisions and in the largest of decisions, right? We always keep saying making mistakes is very important, but more important than that is learning from them.
Exactly. Yep. And that's the right way to frame it, right? We are learning. Those mistakes and those failures all contribute to our learning. So it's really
exactly.
Good. Okay. How can people find out more about you, the work that you're involved in, anything that you want to share?
I think what I'm living and breathing right now is all about Skyflow. So you can find out more about what I'm up to, or what my team, or what Skyflow is up to, at skyflow.com. Check out the blogs. We have also a podcast called Partially Redacted, which has some really insightful speakers that Sean, our head of marketing, kind of brings in. So I would highly recommend that as well. I'm on Twitter and LinkedIn, so you folks can find me there. And at any point in time, most of the time, just ping me. And I love talking to folks and just chatting, helping people out with anything that I can do.
Fantastic. Make sure those links are in the show notes to make it easy to find. And Amruta, thank you so much for joining us and helping us understand what makes a product team productive and how to create one and manage one.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Chad. It was a wonderful chat.
And again, for listeners, if you want the written summary of what we discussed and that one-page action guide, please go to productmasterynow.com/475. Everyone, as always, keep innovating.
Thank you for listening to Product Mastery Now, where product leaders and managers gain product mastery through practical knowledge, influence, and confidence. By listening, you are becoming a product master, creating products customers love. Find additional resources at productmasterynow.com. Keep innovating.